Well, we have an absolute, and forgive me for gushing a bit, but we have a legendary, if I can call you a living legend, a legendary blues man here who is a seminal blues player, somebody I can remember playing his records 30 years ago. And it's a blessing that we have Dennis McCurdy in Pittsburgh to help bring artists like this to town. He played at a sold-out show last night at Bottle Brush Gallery and Center for the Arts as part of the Harmony in the House concert series. And you'll get to know him this hour. It's our pleasure now to welcome Mr. Roy Bookbinder.
What you gonna do when your baby says you're gonna pack up and go? What you gonna do when the gal you love says she doesn't want you no more? Well, you can run, you can hide, catch a freight train. The life that you was leading's never gonna be the same. What you gonna do when your baby from the bank, get out the house you live in, it's your home. What you gonna do? They take your automobile, they leave you on the street all alone. Well, you can tell your ma, tell your pa, but they never wanna see you back in Arkansas. What you gonna do when your baby said you're gonna pack up and go? Your money on a pony won't run. What you gonna do? You're down to your last buck, man. You know you can't buy no more fun. You know what should have happened, you know what would have been, you know we could have got there, but your pony didn't win. What you gonna do? To do.
Roy Bookbinder at the Saturday Light Brigade. Tell me about that song, how it came to you.
Well, that's the song that I wrote that song. It sounds like an old blues song because everything I write sounds like an old blues song. But it's not really a blues song. I get introduced as being a blues singer, and I'm really just a folk singer that plays some, it's kind of like a Carolina style of blues playing, what they used to call the East Coast style of finger picking the guitar. Differentiating from the heavy sounds of the Delta.
Yeah, and then the Piedmont.
The Piedmont, that thing was created by a college boy that wrote a book on the blues. The players in the Carolinas never called themselves the Piedmont players, though now they do because of, I hate that. I call it the East Coast style of finger-picking blues.
I was curious about that because I I typically hear east and west, and then the only time I see Piedmont is in articles.
Well, you know, the academics in a lot of ways, they created what they wanted, something that they could talk about and categorize. And it's just music. It's just music. I mean, I'm at home at a bluegrass festival, a blues festival, a jazz festival. It doesn't matter where the audience's head is at. You have to be an entertainer, and you just play what you love. And I never made a conscious effort to do anything really to become popular.
That's one thing I've always loved about you, because your music isn't really, you can't pigeonhole it. It does not fit into one other than good or great. But it doesn't, and that's kind of what we're up to here too, great. Saturday mornings.
Well, all public radios, is this public radio?
Yes, yes, sir.
Yeah, all public radios are really the lifeblood of the nation, because we don't have to, nobody hands us a formula. We just kind of get out there and do it. And that's what you do, and we respect you for that.
Well, there's so much I want to ask you. Can you just tell me a little bit about growing up? What your childhood was like?
I'm still growing up. I'm 71. I grew up in a middle-class family. My father was a frustrated saxophone player who gave up music in 1929 to get married and have a family, and never forgave us for it. I joined the Navy when I was 18 years old to get away from that situation, and then he died while I was in the Navy, so that was okay. God bless him. May he rest in peace.
Wow, so you were in the Navy in the
1962, I joined the Navy, and my claim to fame was I was on the aircraft carrier that was involved in the Cuban blockade.
Mm.
And it was my first cruise, and they asked me if I shot the rifle in boot camp. I said twice. They said, well, sign here, and we'll put you on the landing party for Cuba. If we invade, I said, where do I sign?
Okay. Wow.
But thank God they didn't land. I wanted off the ship. We were at sea for 51 days. That was a long time.
Whew. When did you start playing guitar?
In the Navy. There was 5,000 of us on. It was a big aircraft carrier. And mostly my memories are, for 3 years, I terrorized Italian villages in the Mediterranean. The last time we were over there, I had to apologize for being the teenager in the bell-bottom trousers with a little white hat. We were wild. But there was a kid from Oklahoma City, 5,000 people there, and I had three friends on that aircraft carrier from different divisions. And the kid from Oklahoma played the guitar, so he showed me some chords, and I bought a guitar in Taranto, Italy, which is on the east coast of Italy, at an Air Force base. And I had another friend who was he was down there in the radar division, I think, and he was from Dallas, Texas area, Fort Worth, and he played saxophone, and he had some blues records by guitar players like Lightnin' Hopkins and John Lee Hooker, and I really liked that. And I had another friend on the ship who was in my division, we were deckhands, and he was from Brooklyn. And he was getting out of the Navy in 6 weeks, so we all envied him. And he was into reading all this weird literature that I never heard of, Jack Kerouac and Ferlinghetti and these beatniks. And he was going to be a beatnik when he got out. So those three friends really put me on the path, because I became a beatnik, folk singer, traveling man.
That's an incredible, when you think about it, your whole life changed as a result of entering the Navy, probably.
Joining the Navy was good.
You hadn't met the guy from Oklahoma.
Yeah, before that, I was into rock and roll. Growing up in New York City, I got to see Buddy Holly three times, and he was my big hero because I had ugly glasses like he had. And he was great. So Buddy Holly and the Crickets.
There's more I want to ask you, but I want to be sure we get more music in too. There's a fly here in the studio
crazy.
Yeah, he was driving me. We'll get him. He was driving me crazy this morning.
Last week, I don't understand it.
Yeah, he. We'll try to find something to attract him.
Right.
He was here before you, and he was the bane of my existence this morning. What would you like to play next?
Play another song. I like to stress the songs that I wrote, actually.
Please.
This is a song I wrote for the Reverend Gary Davis, who changed my life in a great way. Reverend Gary Davis was from Gray Court, South Carolina. He and Blind Boy Fuller, his pal, were playing on the streets of Durham or Raleigh, North Carolina, during the tobacco growing season every year, because there was a lot of fast money there. And a fella from the local store that sold records thought they were pretty good, and he made a few phone calls, and they got him a record deal in New York City. They went up on the train with two brand-new National Steel guitars that they bought him down there, and they were going to make blues records in New York. And Gary Davis made one blues record, two songs in those days on one disc. And then he got religion. He was up in New York for about 4 hours when the Lord called him, and he said he's not going to record any more blueses. So they said they let him record some spirits, Christian songs, with playing the guitar in the same style. And then Blind Boy Fuller got up there and recorded all the beautiful blueses he learned from Gary Davis on the train ride up, and he became an overnight sensation. That's the way it goes. And Gary Davis ended up singing on the streets of New York for Jesus, and spirit changed most of his life.
Wow.
In 1960-ish, folk music kind of boomed up there, and Peter, Paul, and Mary covered a song they heard the blind preacher singing on 135th Street about Samson and Delilah. And Gary Davis was called down to the publisher's office. Folk singers being good people back then, they weren't concerned with Garth Brooks doing their material, you know. They insisted that Reverend Davis get money, so they asked him, the old blind guy sitting in the chair, did you write the song about Samson and Delilah? He said he never wrote any songs. The song was revealed to him in the spring of 28. Whoa. Peter Yarrow pointed at the paper and made the lawyers put his name on the contract, Reverend Davis's, and Reverend Davis got $500 cash money. That's a lot of money for a guy singing on the street.
Yeah.
In 1960. And that was just the beginning. They record sold 3 million copies, the album. Folk music was booming, pop stars. Peter, Paul, and Mary were pop stars. And Gary Davis ended up getting signing with Joan Baez's manager, Mandy Greenhill, and Folklore Productions. And he never sang on the streets again. He ended up buying a house in Long Island. And he toured the world as Reverend Gary Davis, playing the folk circuit and the blues circuit. And it was rumored that he gave $5 guitar lessons. And I was getting $100 a month to go to college on the GI Bill, so I called up Reverend Davis after I was hanging out with Dave Van Ronk, his guitar style really tickled me. You know, he'd play stuff like the Candyman Blues. And he got that from Gary Davis, but Gary Davis remembered it from when he was a kid down in South Carolina. That little syncopation thing, really, I had to learn how to do that. And I still get off on it. It's amazing.
Yeah.
A simple man. And so I get to Gary, call up Gary Davis. I said, is it true you give guitar lessons? He said, yeah, I give guitar lessons. It costs you $5 for a guitar lesson. I said, I'm coming over. He said, come on down. So I went over there, and he said, what can you play? So I played him a Candyman Blues. I only knew three songs. And he said, good God almighty, you sound like Dave Van Ronk. Well, the nicest thing anybody ever said about my playing, but Gary didn't like the way Dave Van Ronk messed with the timing. But I didn't like the way Gary played it, really. So for 5 hours, I'm having a guitar lesson. He's trying to unlearn my best song.
Wow.
Ended up, neither of them liked the way I played it, and they're both dead, but here I am. So that worked out. And then Reverend Davis told me he was going on the road. He had a tour coming up, and he showed me it's on the table. And I said, wow, I got $50 saved up. Maybe I'll go on a tour with you. And he laughed at me, said, $50 ain't going to get you nowhere, boy.
Huh.
But before I left, he said, if you want to go on the tour, you bring your $50. So that's when I quit school for the last time. I went on the road with Reverend Davis, and that was pretty cool. It was the beginning. I traveled with Reverend Davis on and off for a year and a half or so, and I met all the great guitar players. The finger pickers would show up at all his gigs or the hotel where we were staying. I met a lot of people. And he taught me a lot about life and how to survive on the road. I had to count the money and make sure everything was good, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And how to take care of life. Sometimes we travel by train because my ticket was half price because the blind guy had to deal with his lead boy could get on it. And Reverend Davis paid my way because my $50 didn't last long. So that was all great. So I wrote this song for Reverend Davis called "The Preacher Picked the Guitar." Sometimes the intro is longer than the song.
I didn't know this was your song.
Yeah, Yorma Kalkinen recorded my song, "The Preacher Picked the Guitar."
I love the song.
Yeah,
I didn't
thanks.
Realize you wrote it.
Yorma usually talks about it if you see him live. I tell you a story about a man I once knew. He was a blind street-singing preacher that played some blues. His fingers picked the guitar, they danced up and down the board. Passed his days just singing and waiting, waiting on the Lord. Well, the people heard his message and they came from miles around. His pulpit was on the streets up in Harlem, sometimes way downtown. His fingers picked the guitar, you know they danced up and down the board. He passed his days just singing and waiting on the Lord. One day the angels heard him sing and told he should be heard. They opened the ears around the world so he could spread the word. Yes, the preacher picked the guitar, his hands made the magic chords. He passed his days just singing and waiting, waiting on the Lord. Sailed across the ocean of London into France, thanking Jesus every day for giving him that chance. His fingers picked the guitar, they danced up and down the board. He passed his days just singing and waiting, waiting on the Lord. One day his voice was quiet as time had come. He knew where he was going and where he had just come from. The preacher picked the guitar, his hands made the magic chords. He passed his days just singing and waiting on the Lord. Told you a story about a man I once knew. He was a blind street singing preacher that played some blues. His fingers picked the guitar, they danced up and down the board. Past his days just singing and waiting on the Lord. Preacher picked the guitar.
Roy Bookbinder at the Saturday Light Brigade. I should have known you wrote that song. You know, it's the way digital media comes across these days, the songwriter credits are sometimes so tiny.
I bet they are. You almost covered a few of my songs. I teach at his guitar camp in the Fur Peace Ranch. There's a new film, it's about a year old now, called The Harlem Street Singer. It's a documentary on Reverend Gary Davis's life, produced and directed by Woody Mann and Trevor Lawrence, his business associate. And Woody Mann and I were roommates back in 71, the year before Gary Davis passed away, May 5th, 1972. And it's a beautiful film. It's the first really piece of work that really shows off Reverend Davis's life and what he meant to all these people. And in the film are some of his disciples, including Jorma Kalkinen, Bob Weir, who took lessons whenever he was in New York, Stefan Grossman, David Bromberg, and myself.
I was curious, there's a Pittsburgher named
Ernie Hawkins. Yeah.
Yeah, I was wondering.
Well, I know Ernie. Ernie's one of the best players, but he didn't end up in the film somehow.
Yeah.
But his wife.
Ernie's amazing. Did you know Lightnin' Hopkins?
I never knew Lightnin' Hopkins.
He would have passed.
He was around.
He passed before Reverend Davis,
I'm not sure about that. I do have an obituary scrapbook, but I don't remember when I put Lightnin' in there.
Yeah, actually, I think he was later I think I remember.
Lightnin' was great. John Lee Hooker was great. John Lee Hooker wanted me to join his band once. I was singing a dirty song at a blues festival. He said, "That's my kind of song." He said, "So you want to be in my band?" Well, I don't know how to play in anybody's band. It would have been a great opportunity had I known how to do that. I have no skills. I'm a one-trick pony. I can play this music that I love, and that's it.
I was curious about your guitar. How old it is and where it came from.
Well, I always played a Gibson Nick Lucas Special, which was the highest priced little guitar they made, but it was a big guitar when they made it. There were no big guitars in 1930-29. The big guitar didn't come out till 34. But the Nick Lucas Special was a deep-bodied little guitar, and it was designed for Nick Lucas, who was a pop star. He had the hit Broadway hit Tiptoe Through the Tulips that spurned Tiny Tim's
good.
Career. Tiny Tim actually got old Nick Lucas on the Johnny Carson show in June of 64, and it's on YouTube. It's brilliant. He's playing a little black guitar. And Gibson made a little bit less expensive version of the Nick Lucas special for Montgomery Wards in 1930 for 1 year only, and it was called A Recording King. Now A Recording King is a Chinese company making replicas. But this is an exact copy of The Recording King that was made in 1930, down to the weight of the bridge plate and the insides. This guitar weighs just 3 pounds. It's a feather. And it's a great guitar, and I haven't played my old guitar since this was built for me. It's built by New Era Guitars, and it's a Roy Bookbinder model, and 8 people have ordered one.
Oh, that's...
So it's very popular. And it's a great guitar, handmade by Tony Klassen in Indiana somewhere. So well, neweraguitars.com.
Thank you for mentioning
and
that.
And it sounds great. It sounds like a 1930s guitar. I picked this guitar up the day it was the strings were put on. I went to teach at the ranch, and my buddy Jorma Kalkinen and G.E. Smith could not believe the guitar was 3 days old when they played it, because it sounds like an old guitar out of the chute, and it's 2 years old now.
And it looks like a well cared for old guitar.
Yeah, well, it's exactly. I mean, down to the pickguard, made of celluloid, and the red spruce top, and red spruce. You got to have red spruce. All pre-war guitars were red spruce. The companies can't get it anymore because it's because of the Appalachian. You can't cut the trees down. But it's just a wonderful instrument.
Roy Bookbinder is the voice of who you're listening to. And thank you for tuning in to the Saturday Light Brigade. Thank you to Dennis McCurdy and his wife, MJ, for making this all happen. It was Dennis. And Dennis, let's just very quickly have you mention the upcoming shows at the Bottle Brush Gallery. Want to be sure we do that because you're the reason this is happening. So
we had a great show there last night, yeah. And like I told Dennis and MJ, if it was this good all the time, I would go professional.
Who do you have? The Early Mays are next. Is that Mike? We can go to this mic here. The Early Mays are next?
Yeah, we have the Early Mays next. They're coming December 5th. 7 to 10 p.m. It's our annual Christmas party. They usually pack the house. It's $15 RSVP to the gallery, Bottle Brush Gallery and Center for the Arts. Just a phenomenal show. They warm everybody for the season. We're taking a break in November because I'm going to run down to Austin, Texas to watch my daughter get married. That's going to be an interesting experience for me. I never thought my baby would do that, but she's doing it. And then we start again in February. We're trying to rebook the Womack Family Band, who just really, again, they lit up the place last year. I mean, we just had so many nights lit up at there. It's amazing. We have the Plowshare Poets coming back for their annual St. Patty's Day in March. And then Linda McCrae's coming back from Nashville.
Oh, great.
Malcolm Holcomb's coming back. Phil Lee's coming back. We're working on booking the Carpenter Ants again, as you call them, the Bug Band. And, it's catching on. People are noticing us. I just had a phone call this week from Peter Yarrow's agent, who wants to know what the heck we're doing there.
Oh, David. David or Michael called you.
Yeah. Hopefully we can work something out there. Steve Katz's agent got a hold of us, wants to come back again. He's published his new book. He wants to come back and do another show there. So, you know, we're really working nonstop, trying to bring in once a month top acts, inexpensive, reasonably priced, so people can come out and actually have an intimate evening with the folks. It is a listening room, as Roy can tell you. People are very attentive, very appreciative. It's actually hard to drag the audience away from him between sets to get him back on stage because the people there really love what's happening, and we're happy to bring that to people. It warms our hearts.
Thanks, Dennis. And let's get another. Want to be sure we get some more songs from Roy.
Let me mention my website, roybookbinder.com.
Roybookbinder.com, and we've linked to it. You don't have to put the space between book and binder on the web.
There's no space. It doesn't tolerate spaces.
No.
And it's awkward for me to even talk about internets, but you got to know.
Now, we linked to you, and I think people should learn. If you don't know Roy Bookbinder's music, I don't want to look in, I don't like to look in the mirror here, but, you know, in the early, mid-70s, when I started doing this kind of radio, I just had so many LPs of yours.
And, thank you.
It's and it was always tickled to play them.
Thank you.
What would you like to do next on that beautiful guitar?
All right. Well, let me just say, back when I was with Gary Davis, I met Ernie Hawkins at Yorma Calgren's Fur Peace Ranch, and we became fast friends because we shared the experience. But we actually knew Gary Davis at the same time. Every once in a while, Reverend Davis would tell me he's going to Pittsburgh. And then he'd be gone for like 2 weeks or longer. And apparently, Ernie would get him a gig and then keep him and the wife there and feed him and take care of them. And I was back east saying, like, geez, I wonder what's up with Reverend Davis. You know, they didn't have cell phones in those days. And I never knew where he was going. And so I learned he was with Ernie, which was a good place because I love Ernie. He's just a great man. And nobody plays Reverend Gary Davis like Ernie Hawkins.
Yeah, he's probably tuned in right now. So
he's the
I'm
best
sure
one.
He's
I called him up the other day and left a message. I don't know if he got it. I think maybe he's out of town because he would have called me. I've talked to him a few times because we had a friend, Paul Jeremiah, who had a stroke back in June.
And oh, I didn't know that.
He's recuperating in Providence, Rhode Island. If you go on the web, if you go to my Facebook page, you can link to careforyou.com, and they're raising money for Jeremiah's recuperation. It's expensive when you're not working and you don't have any means. So he's staying with a dear friend who's taking care of him in Providence. And they can contact me through the website if they can't find this Care for You thing. I think he's going to play again. He's playing a little bit, and he walks and talks. And I've been spending a lot of time there while I worked in New England, and Paul's doing, I think, remarkably well, but he's not able to – he might not be able to work for a good while.
Well, music's so therapeutic and recovery. Yeah. And, you know, I was talking to my brother who plays professionally. He's been at it for maybe 50 years. He's around 60. Yeah. It's 40 years, I guess. And I was mentioning some folks I really like, one in particular, John Hendricks, a jazz singer who's still going strong in his 80s.
Was he with the other two, Hendricks?
Yes, Hendricks and Rod Lambert.
Oh,
Hendricks
God,
and
they're great. And, I got them on my Pandora.
Yeah, he's still singing and still sounding great. And I said to David, David said, well, you know why he's still working, don't you? And I said, why is that? He said, well, you think he's working for the love of it. That's partly true, but he probably also needs the money.
Exactly.
You have no idea.
Exactly.
You know, and it's
right. There's no 401ks in folks in jazz playing. Okay, I'll play a song here. This is one I wrote for – I had a lot of friends that worked in the medicine shows back in the old days. And Pink Anderson and Peg Leg Sam were pals of mine. And Diamond Teeth Mary. Diamond Teeth Mary was a classic blues singer that ended up in a retirement village in Florida who, rock bottom, my late brother-in-law got to play the blues again. And she was a trip. And she's actually mentioned in Lee Von Helm's song, W.C. Walcott's Medicine Show. There's a line in there about the lady with the diamond smile, and that was Diamond Teeth Mary, who in 1949 played a big tent show through Arkansas. That she was the headliner in the Rabbit Foot Minstrel Show that Levon no doubt saw when he was a kid. And this song is dedicated to all those fine folks that traveled around the country selling medicine. Step right up, folks, you just got to see the magnificent, magical, mysterious menagerie. It'll amaze, it'll amuse, it'll arouse and astound. No doubt the most bodacious show in this town. Pack up your sorries, kiss away your cares. You won't have to worry no more. If you're tired and run down and life ain't worth living no more, and you can't hardly drag yourself out of bed like before, you got no health, no vitality, no vigor, no zest. The Chief's Indian Remedy Elixir's the best. Don't hesitate, you don't want to be late. Get there before it's all gone. Yeah, they got a peg-legged dancer and an Indian chief. A blue-singing lady with diamonds in her teeth. Why, they got him a two-headed turtle man? You just gotta see it. And they got him a chicken that can count to 10, that's right. You follow them down to the free show tonight. You don't wanna miss it begin. You gotta drink it neat, that's right, it ain't too sweet. Before long you'll be back wanting more. The chief will make you believe the doc ain't there to deceive, and the story that he weaves will relieve you of some of your pain and all of your chains. But you'll be glad that you came to the show, yeah. On the record, that clarinet player really takes off here. It's a beautiful spot. I'll just do the best I can till I finish the verse. Step right up, folks, you just got to see the magnificent, magical, mysterious menagerie. Short one.
Oh, gosh. What a great...
I was supposed to go out with Chief Thundercloud's medicine show in the spring of 71. Pink and Pegleg Sam had it all set up. Pink couldn't play anymore because of his stroke, and Pegleg needed somebody else to work as a straight man and stuff and just play the guitar. So I was all excited about going out with Chief Thundercloud's medicine show, which was the last medicine show.
Huh.
And it was filmed in the late 60s by the University of North Carolina. There's a film called The Last Medicine Show, I believe. But... the winter of 71, Pink Anderson called me up down in Florida and told me that the tour is off. I said, what happened? He said, the chief's heart attacked him. I said, what? Oh. He said, he's dead.
Oh, my.
But I love that expression, though, his heart attacked
him. His heart attacked him.
Yeah, that's what I use now whenever I describe somebody that had that episode.
Yeah, that's much more direct.
Yeah.
Active voice. Why
His heart attacked him.
His heart was attacked. Yeah, I like that.
Yeah.
The heart attacked him.
Yeah, So I never got to tour with the real medicine show, but I did work with a recreated medicine show on the State Fair circuit, Dr. Dan Barth's medicine show, back when I was during my Nashville period, when I went country. You know about that?
Yes. I remember a few of the records.
Well, when I went country, basically, I was a regular on TNN's Nashville Now TV show, Ralph Emery's show on TV, where you sing your song and you sit on the couch. I sat on the couch.
Yeah, I forgot about that.
I was
that.
On the couch with Minnie Pearl, yeah. Roy Acuff, and Chet Atkins, and Keith Whitley.
Whispering Bill Anderson, probably.
Oh, yeah, I was on with Whispering Bill. I was on there with Porter Wagner. That was great. And Glenn Campbell was the guest host one night when I was on the show, and he was screwing up the whole show. And I said to him, I said, we don't do that at this point. And he says, this is my first time doing this. Yeah. Why me? Why me?
He's missing all the breaks.
I said, why me? I said, I should have been the host.
Did you know Carl Martin?
Yeah, I knew Carl Martin. Ted Bogan, Martin. Yeah, Carl Martin was great. He made the Joe Louis Blues in 1931. But as an older man, the three of them toured together, Martin, Bogan, and Armstrong.
Yeah.
And my friend Pink Anderson taught Ted Bogan how to play guitar. I ought to play you a Pink Anderson song. This is one I got from Pink Anderson. He sang this song for over 50 years. I'm proud to say I've played this song for over 60 years. I just want to tell you about a man named Boone. His home was down in Tennessee. Woo, the boy made his living stealing chickens and anything he could see. That's right. A Popeye man runs so fast that his feet never stayed in a row. If a freight train passed, it didn't matter how fast, Boone would always get on board. People said he was a traveling man. He certainly was a traveling man. He was the most travelingest man that ever was in that land. The boy traveled everywhere. He was known for miles around. He didn't get caught and never got whooped till the police shot him down. Now listen to this. Police shot him with a rifle. A bullet went through his head. That's right. People there were coming from miles around to see if that traveling man was dead. The telegram down south where his mama lived, she was upset and carried away with tears. She walked up and opened up the coffin's lid, but the fool had disappeared. They said he was a traveling man. That's what they said. Certainly was a traveling man. He was the most traveling this man that ever was in that land. Traveled everywhere. He was known for many miles around, but he didn't get caught and didn't get whooped till the police shot him down. That boy was on the Titanic ship the day it was going down. He was standing out by the port side, you understand, he had his head hung down. When he did jump overboard, all the people said he was a fool. About 2.5 minutes after that, the cat was shooting dice in Liverpool. He was a traveling man. That's what they said. He was a traveler. You know what I'm talking about. He traveled. Yeah. That's right. Traveled everywhere. He was known for miles around. caught and didn't get whooped till the police shot him down. Now listen, the police hired an automobile with the purpose just to chase old Boone. They were chasing him from 6 in the morning till 7:30 the next afternoon. That Popeye man runs so fast, fire did come from his heels. He burned up the cotton, he scorched up the corn. He might as well have drove through the farm. His people said he was a traveling man. Certainly was a traveling man. Oh, Picket Roy. Ooh, baby. That's right. Like I said, he didn't get caught, never got whooped till the police said that. You know, the police caught the traveling man. They had him up to hang one day. The jurymen all asked that traveling man, what did he have to say? He begged the jurymen to bow their heads, to bow their heads in prayer. Then he crossed his leg and he winked an eye and he went up through the air. He was, people said that he traveled a lot. That's an old time song. That goes way back.
I
love that song. I played that song since the beginning.
That's a terrific song, and it's that's the one thing I'd say is just about everything you play is delightful, even if it's sad, even if it's just
that's a good description.
Delightful in just terms of like sort of tickling all your emotions and bringing you in, yet not making you feel left out or like you don't know enough or like you're not,
exactly,
you know, smart enough, and this kind of accessibility. And I don't want to over-describe things, but right, it's just, I mean, how you can't just smile and sort of feel tickled,
really,
is beyond me.
Really?
It's just and I don't know if too many people.
If I had a fan club, you could be the president.
Hey, I'll do it.
This is good radio. Yeah. I'm enjoying this. I haven't heard that such praise since my mama passed away. That's good. She lived to be 97, God bless her. She was a trip. You know, I was a disappointment when I dropped out of college all those times to go to the Navy and then to go on the road with a blind black preacher that played the guitar. She couldn't believe it. And then, but she came around, boy. She was 93 years old when me and the new wife, having our 16th anniversary in December, God bless her, and we were over in Denmark at the Tundra Folk Festival, and they had a free phone backstage. It was one of the sponsors that the performers could call up anybody. So I said, I'm calling up Mama. So I called up Mama in her retirement village, and the phone rang for a while, and she answers the phone. I said, hello? I said, hello? She said, who is this? I said, it's Roy. She says, Roy, how are you? I said, how are you? You're 93 years old. I'm fine. She says, where are you? I said, Nancy and I are over here in Denmark, in Copenhagen. She says, you have a gig? I said, yeah. She said, thank God, thank God. Then she asked me if I got a haircut.
I'll share this with you later. But
it's always about having a gig.
It's always about having a gig. And you know.
God bless the mamas. I got a lot of respect for anybody that's a mama. It can't be easy.
I can't believe we're down to like 4.5 minutes of radio time here. I hope Dennis will bring you back.
Yeah, I could have a 2-hour special.
I'd love to do it. Would you? Anytime you want to do it, we'll do it. We'll record
okay.
it. Where are you heading somewhere?
I'm heading south. I'm playing in Erie tonight.
Oh, good. We have listeners at WSAJ Grove City.
I'm playing at the museum. The
okay.
art museum.
Oh, with Kelly Armour, maybe.
I don't know anything about
I don't know
about
if she's
it.
Still there, but we have listeners in Grove City. It's only about a 20.
If they Google Roy Bookbinder Erie, it'll come up,
okay.
I'm sure.
It's only about a 20-minute drive. So.
Yeah, 20 minutes from here?
No, from our affiliate station.
Oh, great. Yeah.
So look for Roy Bookbinder if you're listening on WSAJ.
They'll squeeze you in, don't worry.
Yeah.
And that's my last show before I head south for the winter. And then the next gig is in Brasstown, North Carolina. Then I'll be in Louisiana, Texas, and Mississippi, and Atlanta, Georgia before I get home to Florida for Thanksgiving. I always did Thanksgiving with my mama up in New York, but she passed away a few years ago. And I did three Thanksgivings with the brothers up there, but it got so cold the last November. I said, I'm not doing enough. You want to do Thanksgiving with Roy, you come to Florida. Because I'm down up here. Mama's gone. And I'll finish up with this song here called The Good Book, my most favorite song that I ever wrote. As Reverend Davis used to say, you didn't write the song, it was revealed to you. And this song, I really... Sometimes I can't believe that I wrote it. I mean, I haven't written a lot of songs, but I wrote the whole new album. But I'm really into writing songs, but I don't know if I'll ever write another one after this. This is, as Reverend Davis used to say when we finished, he said, "We done named the baby, let's go." This is the good book. I use a lot of Reverend Davis's big chords. I love it. My mama told me, my papa told me too. The good book's got the answers. It will tell you what to do. The good book's got the answers. You just wait and see. The good book's got the answers there just for you and me. Learn to sing and dance. Work and play real hard. Watch your step along the way on your journey to the stars. Don't you be a cheater. Don't be telling lies. Straight and narrow path you're on will lead you to the prize. Children, the old and feeble too. Don't be doing to others what you don't want done to you. Mind your own business, keep singing a happy song. A soldier in God's army always knows what's right from wrong. Don't be wanting what's not yours, give thanks you got a lot. You never miss what you don't have, get from them that's got. Fussing and a-fighting is not the righteous way. You just best be quiet if you've got nothing good to say. My mama told me, my papa told me too. The good book's got the answers, it will tell you what to do. The good book's got the answers, you just wait and see. The good book's got the answers there, just for you and me.
Thank you, Roy Thank Bookbinder. You. What a pleasure.